There we go. Okay, so we left off on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. And the Gemara now, we had just finished discussing the Gzeira of Shemen, and then the other Gzeiras that Shammai Beis Hillel made that day, Shamnam and Pitam and Yenam, and we spoke about Binoseim. What was the Gzeira of Binoseim? Was it against, as the Gemara's conclusion, was it against Yichud with a non-Jewish woman, or was it a Gzeira of Tumah on Binoseim? But be that as it may, the Gemara now tells the following story. Mistamech v'ozil, it's the sixth line, beginning of the sixth line, from the top of the page. Mistamech v'ozil, Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, akasve de Rav Simloi Shamei. So Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, who's Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's grandson, was walking, and he was being supported on the leaning on Rav Simloi Hishamish. So Amar Lei, he said to his Hishamish, and this is where, of course, you see that the great Rashi Yeshiva typically have two kinds of people who have relationships with them, Shamashim and the students. But the ones who really know them and really know what's going on in their world and in their mind are the Shamashim. These are the ones who really hear them, what you might say, unplugged, when the mic is off. So he says to him, Amar le Samloi, lo hayisa. And remember, by the way, Samloi was the one who Shmuel quoted on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. Right, Shmuel quoted Samloi, that Darish Rav Samloi ben Itziv in the Rabbi Yehuda, which is, they say, Yehuda Nasiya and his based in, were Matir the Shemen. And Rav said, we don't trust these Ludai. And Shmuel said, would you like me to go check with Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya whether the report is correct? And Rav was embarrassed, right? But the Gemara had quoted Rav Samloi as giving a drasha, and the story in fact demonstrates that he was correct. So he wasn't actually there when they did it, but Yehuda Nesia says to Simloi, Simloi, lo haisa amesh beis ha-medrash, you weren't there in the beis ha-medrash last night, kishi tarnu es ha-shemesh. It's such a funny way of describing things. You know what we did last night? He's like, the big part, we were matir shemen shalakim. Okay, so he said you weren't there. So Amar lo, his shamish says to him, it's like a tefillah, b'yameinu tatir afes ha-pas. So in our lifetime, you should also permit pasakim. So Amar Lo, he said to him, you know what, maybe I'd like to do that, but Im Kain, Karulam based in Sharia. They're going to call us, a modern Orthodox based in Mumatir everything, right? So, Ditznan, because the Mishnah teaches, put whatever label you want to put on there. I'm sure if you ask Satmar, they'd say it's Lubavitch, whatever it is, okay? So, Ditznan, they quote the Mishnah at the end of Adios. Heyid Rabbi Yosef ben Yoezer ish tzred al ayil kamso dechan. I'll translate in a moment. V'amashke beis mitbechaya dechan v'al deyikrev lamisa misa'ev. V'koru lei Yosef Sharia. So, I cannot resist having spent many hours in my life working on the Seches Adios of my dissertation to comment on this Mishnah for a moment. This is a highly unusual Mishnah in two ways. Firstly, it is probably the oldest actual direct quote in rabbinic literature that we have, at least that we can identify being named. In other words, there may be material in Tanakh literature is very old, but we can't identify it as such. It's anonymous. But this is probably the oldest quotation. A direct quotation, and I say that for the following reason. Oddly enough, it's in Aramaic, which would suggest that you have a few Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos. Step back for a second, just a little history. Who is Yosef ben Yoezer? Yosef ben Yoezer, I believe, was a member of the first Zug. The Mishnah in Avos and the Mishnah in Chagiga lists off the five Zugos of the Nasi and the Av Beis Din, who were in charge of the Sanhedrin. The last of the five pairs was Shammai and Hillel, okay, who, according to the Gemara we saw many blot ago, they began their Nesius 100 years before the Korban HaBayis, around 30 BCE. So you're going back sort of four more generations. Shimon ben Shetach, who's the third pair, Shimon ben Shetach, Yehuda ben Tabai, or the third Zug, so the middle one, he was brother-in-law to Alexander Janaeus, to Yanai. His sister was Shlom Tzion. So Yosef ben Yoezer is even two generations before that. I believe he's the first Zug, not the second. If you look in Meseches Avos or in Chagiga at the beginning of the second Perek, you will see all five Zugos. Now, in Chagiga in the beginning of the second Perek, they quote all five Zugos arguing about the very same issue, but it's not a direct quotation. One member of the pair said Lismoch, and one said not Lismoch. The Machlokes was about whether or not you're allowed to do Smicha on a Karban on Yom Tov, or you have to do the Smicha before Yom Tov. In other words, is it unnecessary to do something unnecessary on Yom Tov or not? So that was, it's not a direct quotation. That's just an indirect attribution of a Shita. In Meseches Avos, you get, starting at the beginning, after, you know, after Shimon Kohen Gadol, what was, and Hanina Ben Antignus Ish Socho, you then get, and they have quotations, but they're in Hebrew, and you get the five Zugos, and they're in Hebrew as well, except that you have a few statements from Hillel in Meseches Avos that are in Aramaic. Now, I suspect, but I can't prove, is that their original statements were, in fact, probably in Aramaic. It's inconceivable to me that somebody translated their statements into Aramaic. Right? It's one I could see translating Aramaic into Hebrew. I don't know. I don't assume that it is known, it is generally accepted now, that the Tanoim, the later Tanoim, certainly spoke Hebrew, Mishnaic Hebrew. That was not a commonly spoken language. And for a long time, Christian scholars, with an anti-Semitic axe, assumed that Hebrew was a dead language in the Second Temple period, and that Mishnaic Hebrew was an artificial construction that was part of the theme of, well, biblical Judaism with real Judaism, and then the Christians took the mantle of biblical Judaism, and rabbinic Judaism was something else, right? That was sort of a distortion. So the idea that the Hebrew language should be continue to be spoken by Jews in the Second Temple period didn't work well with the scholarship, with the anti-Semitic bias in scholarship. The discovery of the Bar Kochba letters, which were written in Mishnaic Hebrew, essentially, that dialect, proved that, in fact, Mishnaic Hebrew was, in fact, the spoken language. So my assumption is that that these Mishnayos were not translated into Aramaic. They started out, I don't know when, I assume at some point Mishnayos were formulated in Hebrew, but at least this Mishnah and Hillel's statements, I assume, reflects the original language, which would make this probably the earliest quotation direct quotation in rabbinic literature of a chacham. Now, what exactly did Yosef ben Yoezer do or say? So, this Mishnah is from Meseches Edios. Edios is a very odd Mesechta. I suspect that most of you probably never opened the Mesechta. It's probably the earliest redacted Mishnah in Shas. It is not organized by topic. Not even like Avos. Avos is not exactly organized by topic, but Avos is of a different nature. It's not halacha, it's Musar, or wisdom literature. But Edios is really almost all, with the exception of maybe one Mishnah, it's all standard halachic Mishnayos, but it is organized by a totally different principle, not by topic, but by sort of formulation of the Mishnah, and a lot of the stuff is early. For example, the opening three Mishnayos are three debates between Shammai, Hillel, and the Chachamim who paskin like neither. Later in that parak, you have a series of debates between Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, Shammai, maybe sometimes someone else. At the end of that first parak, you have four debates between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Hillel retracted their opinion. Chazru lahoros kedivrei Beis Shammai. And then a good chunk of the Masechta begins with Hayids, people testify. The rabbinic story behind this, whether it's legend, whether it's history, whether it's something in between, is that on the day that they threw Rabban Gamliel out as Nasi, he was very intolerant, he had the streak of Beis Shammai in him, they let everybody into the Beis Medrash, and all these people came and brought the Dinim into the Beis Medrash that had not been heard in many, many years. The last, I would say, the second, third, part of the sixth, and all seventh and eighth prakam are almost all Mishnayos that begin with Hayid so-and-so, and virtually all those Tanayim are Yavne or before Yavne. So this is probably also the oldest Mishnah in Edios as well. So Yosef ben Yoezer testified about three things. And what were those three things? So the first one is an Ayol Kamsa Dechan. An Ayol Kamsa is a species of locust or grasshopper. He testified that a particular species was tar. The Gemara will talk about all these. Right now the Gemara is going to deal with why the Nasiya did not want to be Matir Pasakum, because he didn't want to be too makil. He didn't want to be labeled as being a makil. Some things never change, by the way, Aaron. The Gemara is going to talk about those cases before it comes back to actually pick apart the Mishnah and talk about each of the pieces. So I'm going to explain briefly now, and either later today or next week we'll get to the more detail, the rest of the pieces. So number one, he said that a particular piece of species of grasshopper is dechan. The word dechay or dechan in Aramaic means tahor, and remember that tahor in biblical Hebrew is the word for kosher. So he said that this species is a kosher species of grasshopper, number one. Number two, the almashke base mitbchaya, on the liquids, the fluids that are found in the base hamitbchayim in the temple. In other words, north of the Mizbeach, you had an area with tables and pillars with hooks in them to hang the animals when you skin them, to clean the animals' intestines. It was called the base hamitbchayim, and literally the slaughterhouse area. So he says that the mashkim in that area, in the base mitbchayim, which typically would have been blood and water, he says are dechan. They're also tahor. We have to talk about what does that mean. What does it mean that liquids are tahor? It sounds like they're not susceptible to ritual impurity, but what does that mean? And finally, al de yikrav lemisa misoav. The word yikrav in Aramaic means to be nogea. It means to touch. So someone who touches a dead person becomes tame. The last one seems at first glance particularly bizarre. What was his testimony? We just read it in 2 weeks ago's Parsha. It says, you know, kol hanogea b'meis benefesh. The Gemara will ask the question. That's problem number one is it's a pasuk. Problem number two is, presumably, based on the conclusion of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yose, he's not even Rabbi, he's Yose ben Yoezer, gave three kulas, and that's why they label Yose Shaya. How was that? What's the kula involved here? So the Gemara on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis will talk about what that is. But in the meantime, he said, the Yikrav Lamisa Misa'an, the Karule, this is in the Mishnah still, Yosef Sharia, Yosef the permitter. Fine. Okay. Amar Le, so Samloi says to Rabbi Huda Nisiya,
presumably that's a very bad thing.
Well, right. You could read the Mishnah. It all depends on your perspective. Okay. So, listen, you know, as I've mentioned before, Rav Lichtenstein, I forget which Adam Gadol he quoted, who said that classically poskim were not machmirim because otherwise people would stop sending their shilas. Now, so it's true. But the difference here is that it seems that he was permitting things that were already sort of assumed to be forbidden, right? As opposed to you ask a shila on a kind of new situation, a specific circumstance. So, and by the way, there is a degree of truth in that. In other words, there's a difference between an issue that comes up and, you know, why are you looking to be machmir versus something where there's long-standing practice? And we've discussed this already, not in these explicit terms, but I think that's clear. So they called them Yosef Shari. So Amar Lei, so Simloi says to Rav Yehuda Nisiya, Hasam Shara Tlas, he was matir three things, but Umar Shara Chada, you only have one to your credit, so you got another one. You got one more, you know, ace in your pocket you can use, because you were matir Shem and Shalakum. So he says to him, if you do one more, akati tartan hu dahavin, it will only be two. So Amar Lei, no, anas sharaya chavisi. He was matir another, actually very important one which is both significant in, when it comes up. I don't know how often in practical terms, but conceptually very important. Ditznan maihi. What is that case? Ditznan zegitech im lobasi mikanat shnei masar chodesh. A man gives his wife a get and says, "This will be your get if I don't return within 12 months." And then umeis b'sel shnei masar chodesh, but he dies within 12 months. The Tanakam of the Mishnah Gittin says, "Eino get." It's not a get. Why? So, firstly, why do we care whether it's a get or not? He's dead, right? In most of the cases, the aguna problem, as I like to quote, I don't know who it was who said it the first time, who told the husband, "You have a choice. Your wife can be a grusha, she can be an almana. You pick," right? So, if he's dead, who cares? So, the answer is it matters because if he had no children, then she is now theoretically subject to yibum v'chalitza and needs it from if he has a brother. So we really want, and the flips, it can be both a stringency and a leniency. On the one hand, it's to her benefit to be divorced so that she's not tied to his brother if he has a brother and if he had no children. On the other hand, it's to her detriment if she wants to marry a Kohen. So now she's a grusha, whereas if certainly men HaTorah, if this get is not a get, she would be allowed to marry a Kohen. What's that?
What about inheritance?
A wife doesn't inherit from a husband either way. It wouldn't matter whether she was a grusha or it wouldn't matter even if she was an almana. And her ksuba and her titlements. I mean, the truth is, it is, you ask a good question, I think about these terms, it is in some ways to her other benefits to be an almana. A grusha, he pays the ksuba and that's it. An almana has many entitlements. Once she collects her ksuba, then she's in the same boat. She's no longer connected to the estate, to the yorshim, and so on. But an almana has the right to be supported by the estate, you know, to live in the estate until she gets remarried or until she asks for her ksuba. So there are financial benefits. It's not inheritance. It's a quasi kind of inheritance, not exactly. It's a maintenance obligation of the estate. So the Tana and the Mishnah said that if you give a get and you say, Hareza giteich im lo bosi mikam and shemesar chodesh, so when is the condition fulfilled? It's fulfilled at the end of 12 months, and he's dead. And the problem is dead men give no divorces, halachically speaking. Even if he gave the piece of paper before, the get cannot be chal. It cannot take effect after he's dead already. So, however, the Tani Allah, there was a braisa taught with respect to the Mishnah, v'rabosenu hitiru alinase. No, the Chachamim, Rabosenu, permitted a woman, in this case, to remarry without any Yibum or Chalitza. They permitted her to remarry. And then they said, v'amrinan, and we said, man Rabosenu. Who was Rabosenu? Who are these people? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Beis Dina de Sharu Mishcha. The Beis Din, that was Matir Shemen Shalakum, named Rav Yehuda Nesia. He was the same one who was Mekel. Now, what was the basis of the Kula? So Savri La Kirabi Yosei, the Amar Zmano Shoshtar Mochia Chalav. He adopted the position of Rabbi Yosei, which was the following. Rabbi Yosei said, why did you bother to write this man in the get? Presumably because it meant to indicate when the date of the get should be set, which should be chal, if in fact he didn't return within 12 months. Let me explain for a moment. Everybody agrees on the following. If a man says to his wife, this is your get now, me'achshav, if I don't return within 12 months, everybody agrees, if he dies within the 12 months, that the get is a good get, because the get is retroactive. He said it's me'achshav. The argument that's really being, that the whole discussion here, is simply about what is the intent of the husband for when the get should be chal. Was his intent that the get should be chal when he gives the piece of paper, or only when the condition is fulfilled, normally at the end of 12 months when he doesn't return? So it's a machlokas in terminology, if you might call a contract law. Dispute. It's not really about a broader principle. It's not really about gin. You could have the same issue would apply if I gave, a man gave a matana to his children, to somebody else, that he didn't want to be subject to Yerusha, to the estate. He wanted out of the estate. If he gives, he says, this is yours, you know, now, if I don't do something in 12 months, and he dies, the same issue would apply. In other words, if the matana was me'achshav, however you get there, if it's now, then the matana is binding. But if the matana does not take effect until after he's dead already, dead men give no gifts. So that's really what this is about. So he believed, like Rabbi Yosei, that in a case like this, we say that the fact that he wrote this man in the get, its only purpose is to indicate when the get is chal. And therefore, if it says January 7th, and he dies in June, and he said to her, when he gave it to her on January 7th, or on January 10th, but this is man in the get, Hareze giteich im lo basi mikam en shem asar chodesh, so the get is assumed to follow the date in the shtar. That's why he put the date there. And that was what Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya's position was. And therefore, in the Mishnah, hiti roli nasa. And now the Gemara just adds, v'lo hodulo either kol shato, v'amri la kol siyato. This means that during his lifetime, they didn't agree with him. The Chacham didn't agree with Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. And the other nusach is his chevra, his siya, did not agree with him. He was sort of, he pushed the issue forward, but the other members of his court didn't agree. So that basically, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya said, I can't be matir pasakum, because otherwise they're going to call me a beis din sharia. Okay, fine. So now, the Gemara asks a very interesting question. Amar le Rabbi Elazar lahahu saba. Rabbi Elazar, who's probably roughly a contemporary, says to a certain elder, Kishari Suha, when you permitted it, and apparently this elder, as you'll see in a moment, was there. He was at the convocation. He was in the Beis Medrash that night. When they permitted it, did you permit her to remarry immediately? Or La'altar Shari Suha? Or Deloasi, because you know he's not coming back. He's dead. Because the Tanai was only technically fulfilled after 12 months. So the Gemara actually is not going to give the answer to the question. But basically it's a really, really kind of interesting question. It's a hard to understand why they would have made her wait 12 months. In other words, if the get is chal now, and I could actually come up with a reason, but it's not discussed here in the Rishonim. Why would you even think that she couldn't remarry till after 12 months? So Tosa says here, the top Tosa says, if you look at Tosos, La'alter shirisua dehalo asi, the im tomar, Tosos says, pshita de la'alter himuteres. Of course, the miyat shemesa rea tanai kimikuyam. It's as if it's been fulfilled. The lo yashuvo leveso. He's not coming back. V'yesh lomar de mikomakom iboile I gazrinan mes atu lomes. Maybe you make gzeira not to let her marry. In this case, because of a case in which he actually hasn't died, but you're pretty sure he's not going to come back, and then all of a sudden he does come back. I don't know. It seems to be something of a stretch. One would think that there's something more of a conceptual underpinning here, and I'm not really sure what it is, because as we know that this tonight, we know he's not coming back, and we know once 12 months comes, she will have been divorced 12 months ago. So what exactly is the issue? You know, it's
the same issue. Is that, I mean, we know that she can remarry. That's not the question. The question is she remarrying as the wife of a dead person, or is she remarrying as a wife of a divorced person? Right? So I think that's
No, because either way, she's going to be the wife of a divorced person. The get is going to... that's the funny question.
If she's married to someone else already, then the get, if she marries somebody after 6 months, the get's not good till 12 months.
But when it's chal 6 months ago. So that's the question, really. In other words, do you say that the get is only chal retroactively? I mean, it's when you reach the 12 months, you know he's not going to come. So you know at the end of the 12 months, the get will be chal retroactively. But right now, it hasn't been chal yet because the 12 months are not up. You know, it's almost like it's almost a larger question.
It goes to a larger question: what happens if she wants to marry the guy's brother?
No, she can't marry his brother.
Well, right, because
it's an erva.
Because the get comes in after 12 months.
Correct.
Right? But if the get doesn't come in for 12 months,
no. But the point is that once 12 months come,
that it's going to happen.
Once the even if we forget whether we know or don't know, it's going to happen. Once 12 months comes, it does happen,
right,
for sure. And then she'll be married to his brother, which is an erva because there's no yibum. So I think the question, and it's almost the question, is if the Tanai, we know the Tanai is going to happen, but it actually hasn't been fulfilled yet, because 12 months have not elapsed where he hasn't returned. We know he's not going to return after 12 months. The question is that considered already a Tanai Mekuyam?
So she marries the brother after 6 months.
Right.
She technically at that time can marry the brother, because there's no get in place at that time, unless we say that the get is in place at that time.
Correct. So I think the question is about how the Tanai works. In other words, when you have the get that's dependent on the Tanai, in other words, arguably, and I think that's what Tosis is saying, of course the get is chal already. Right? The get is subject to a Tanai. Right? Normally, the only reason we normally need to wait 12 months is because we don't know whether it's going to be filled or not, but now we know. Right. What the alternative question you can ask is, what if there was Trias HaMesim happens on him? You know, what if he comes back from the dead? What would the din be then? Is he the same person or is he a different person? So, anyway, that's always one of those fascinating questions. There's a Tosos. I spoke about this briefly last week in my shul between the Chamar. Tosos and Bava Metzia asks a question. The Gemara tells a story about an Amora who saw Eliyahu HaNavi. And he walked through the non-Jewish graveyard. So he said to Eliyahu HaNavi, isn't Mara Kohen? And he said, didn't you learn Seder Taros that a goy is not metame ba'ohel? It's actually not a Mishnah in Taros. It's kind of interesting. But and so Tosis asked the question, but Eliyahu HaNavi is a Kohen. How could he be mechaye the child, the dead child of the Isha Tzarfatid? How could he do Tchias HaMesim on? He's a Kohen, he's being Metame. So Tosa says, because since he was Batuach, that he could succeed in reviving the child, it was Pikoch Nefesh. Which is very interesting in its own right. So, things that we know going forward, how do they impact right now? I said as an aside, that wasn't really what I was interested in talking about. I said, is Pikoch Nefesh Shayach on dead people, if you can bring him back to life? But anyway, be that as it may, and that's a case where he knew he could bring him back to life. Here, you know that the guy is not coming back after 12 months.
But the tonight was that I don't come back. He didn't say, if you know I'm not going to come back in 12 months. He said, after 12 months, if I'm not back.
No, he didn't say after. He said, if I don't come back, im lo basi mikan vad 12 chodesh, if I don't come between now and 12 months, then this is your get. So if the get is chal now, you could argue and say, look, bottom line is, normally we have to wait 12 months because we don't know what's going to happen. But we know he can't come back in 12 months. So will he come within 12 months or not? The answer is, he cannot now. Therefore, maybe it's a get already. The Tanai has been fulfilled. That's why Tosus uses the language, Harei Tanai Kimikuyam, right? It's not technically been fulfilled because 12 months haven't happened, but it is essentially fulfilled because you know he can't come back in 12 months. Right. So that's the... So anyway, so he asked the Zaken that question. So the Zaken responded and said, excuse me, V'tibay lacha mas nisan. Why are you asking me? Now, we paskined last night in the Beis Medrash that even if the man says to his wife, Hareza giteh, im lo basi mikan at shnei masar chodesh, that we pulled like Rabbi Yosef, that the Zman and the Shtar proves that it's from the time of the giving of the Shtar. So he says, why are you asking me about us? You could ask on a different Mishnah the very same question. Tiboy lach amas nisan, ask your question on the Mishnah, the Tanan, Hareza giteh me'achshav im lo basi mikan at shnei masar chodesh. If a person says to his wife, it's the same parak in Gittin, this is your get from now, if I don't come back in 12 months, where everybody agrees, umeis besol shnei masar chodesh, have a get, ha'kayim le tenoi. So that, the last three words are not in the, four words are not in the Mishnah, but Hareza, have a get, the ha'i kindly tonight. The Gemara says, why? Because, you know, he can't come back within 12 months, and it's retroactive, according to everybody, because he said, me'achshav. So, v'tibay lach la'altar ha'vegita, the halawasa, odom lach yud beis chodesh, dray kindly tonight. It's literally the exact same case. It's only a question of how you interpret the terminology, but the bottom line is, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in his Beis Din said that im is retroactive, and everybody agrees, me'achshav is retroactive. So why don't you ask it on that? So he said to him, Einochanami, you're right, I could have asked that. Only Shunda Havis Bumanyana, you were there, so I'm curious if the issue came up. Okay, the Gemara doesn't answer the question. Amar Abaye. Abaye says the following. Abaye now just wants to fine-tune the terminology. Hakol modim, that if someone, let's say, gives his wife a get and says, Lichishateitse chama minartika, when the sun comes out of its envelope, right, this is your get. Lichishateitse. And he dies in the middle of the night. L'chinofka ka'amarla. When it actually exits is what he's saying to her. B'chimayis b'leilya. When he dies at night, get la'achar misahu. That's a get la'achar misa, it's not a get. Almanas sh'teitzeichama minartika. If he says, almanas, then me'achshav ka'amarla. That is retroactive. The Gemara is going to say in a moment that the almanas automatically, almanas is a very useful clause in Tanoim. It helps solve a lot of problems, and it makes it retroactive. So me'achshav kamerle, that's called, that means me'achshav chimayis b'layla havadai tino have v'get me'chayimhu. In other words, it's definitely tanai, but the get is immediate, and provided that the world doesn't end in the middle of the night, that the sun actually does come out, so the get is a chal from the beginning of the night. He dies in the middle of the night, the get is good.
Can they sleep together?
No, it would be a get yashan. And finally, Abaye says, "I says the get mechayim have a kedravuna that marafuna kala omer almanas. If you introduce the clause almanas in your term, ka omer me'achshav dami. It's as if you said explicitly, it's from now. Lo nechaku ella beim teitze. It's only if you use the im if." Rabbi Huda Hanasi Savar Lak Rabbi Yosei, the Amar Zmano Shtar Mochichalav. He holds like Rabbi Yosei, that the Zman and the Shtar demonstrates that it's Me'achshav. B'havale Kimehayom Imesi Kimehachshav Imesi. If you say Hareza Gitech, this is your get. Mehayom if I die, or Me'achshav if I die, everybody agrees that's a good get. So that's what Rabbi Huda Hanasi holds Im is like. Rabbanon, unless Lud Rabbi Yosei, they hold that an im clause is not that way. And b'havan le kizeh get imesi greida. It's like a regular case. This is your get. In effect, shouldn't have said imesi, but kishim almost. And therefore, it's not a good get because he died at night, or in this case, he died within the 12 months. Okay, so that's the end of the discussion of Shem and Shalachim. Pasachim, we discuss some, but we're gonna come back to it at a later point. But now the Gemara gets to talk about Yosef ben Yoezer's testimony. Gufa, heid Yosef ben Yoezer istreda al ayil kamsa dechan v'amashke beimit b'chaya dechan v'al deyikrav lemisa misoya. V'karule Yosef Sharia. My ayil kamsa. What is an ayil kamsa? Meaning, what was novel about this? What was the chiddush about the grass, this particular species of grasshopper? Rav Papa Amar that it was a shushiva, and Rav Chia Bar Ami Mishmei de Ula says Amar suspil. Okay, I know that's very helpful to us. Probably if I told you what the name of the species of the grasshopper, if we actually knew, it probably wouldn't help you either. But what is the Gemara is more interested in what they knew what these species were. If you're interested in seeing, I don't think that he identifies these two specific things, but there is an entry. I looked at it yesterday. I don't remember which species he gave. It's not, for our purposes, it doesn't matter. Yehuda Felix, in his book, Hachai v'tzomeach. Chai v'tzomeach b'mishnah, or tzomeach v'chai b'flora and fauna. Tzomeach v'chai b'mishnah. I know the English title, and then I know the order. So Yehuda Felix was a botanist and a zoologist, I think more botanist, who was at, I think, Hebrew for a very, very long time. He died not so long ago, and he wrote two very important, very useful works for B'nai Torah. One was Tzomeach v'chai b'mishnah and Achai v'tzomeach b'torah. Unfortunately, he didn't do Tanakh, he only did Torah. But if you want to do the birds, you know, or the species of grasshopper and so on, that's the place to look. So he has an entry under Ayil Kamsa in his book on the Mishnah. It's really based upon, so he, most of the species in the Torah is there, but the three of the four species they can identify, they know. The fourth they're not sure about. So anyway, the Gemara here, so that's if you're interested in exploring that. The Gemara here says, now explains what, how did Rav Papa and Rechia Bar Ami understand the Chiddush of Yosef ben Yoezer's testimony? Rav Papa Amar, the second line from the bottom, Shushiva, v'kamipalgi b'rosho aruch, mar savar rosho aruch aser, umar savar rosho aruch mutar. So Rashi explains that there are two shitos, it seems, how to understand, how to darshan the Torah. This gives some simonim of what makes a grasshopper kosher, and then it identifies four species. And so the way Rashi presents it here, I don't know the Sugyan Chulin so well, but the way Rashi presents it here is it's a machlokas basically whether the list is fundamentally exhaustive or whether they're just examples. In other words, Asherlo Chra'ayim Mima'al L'raglov L'nater Bohein Al Ha'aretz. The Torah describes that these grasshoppers or these sheretz ha'aretz that you're allowed to eat are ones that have two extra kra'ayim, knees or something like that, be above its legs in order to hop, l'naterba, to jump on the ground. All the pictures, again, I'm not an expert in grasshoppers, but all the pictures in Felix's book seem to have sort of four legs and then two additional legs, but I'm trying to figure out which of the front four are actually the legs and which are these, I'm not sure what they are. So one Tana says that basically the list is fundamentally exhaustive. It's what Rashi says, klal uprat, and ein bechlal elamasha beprat. The Torah gives you the rule. Then it lists off four species, arba, chargol, salam, and chagav, and those four, and that's it. And if you're trying to figure out whether this is one of those species, so the common denominator of all those species is they have short heads. They don't have long heads. And this Ayil Kamsa has a long head, and Yosef ben Yoezer was saying that it's permissible. So that's what the Rav Papa understands. The other shita says no, that you darshan, I think, klal uprat uklal with the grasshoppers, and these four species are sort of set up a bunch of simanim for grasshoppers, and the Gemara tells you what the simanim are. It has to have four legs and four wings and karsulin, which I think are the two extra things, I'm not sure the ones it hops with. And then, and this is the key point for us, it has to have knuff of chofenes rubo. Its wings, when on the body, have to cover a majority of the body. More than 50% of the grasshopper's body have to be covered by the wings. All right? So what's that? So Rav Papa, let me go back for one more. Rav Papa, who said it was Shushiva, says it's only these four species. You want to know what's one of the four species? The common denominator is they have short heads. And Yosef ben Yoezer said, no, even a long head. So Rapapa, Mar Shushiva, v'kam epalgi b'rosh ha'arach. Mar sav ha'rosh ha'arach aser, u'mar sav ha'rosh ha'arach mutar. Now that's really machlokas of whether this list is exhaustive. And Rav Chiya Bar Ami says, no, everybody's going to darshan klal apart of klal. But he says, Mishmei du'ula amar, susbil, barusha orach kuleomali pligi de osir. He thinks that everybody agrees, even Yosef ben Yoezer, that rosho orach is osir. What they're arguing about is the following: b'hocha knaf of chofen as ruba yedeh chak kam palgi. This is a case where the wings sort of cover a majority of the body, but barely. And the question is that enough or not? Mar savar ruba kol du peinan. As long as it's a rove, you're good. Mar savar ruba de minkar peinan. It has to be clearly noticeable that it's a majority. This idea, by the way, of a rove versus a ruba de minkara is something that comes up in a more common place in halacha, which is when it comes to benching with a zimun of asara. So we say that you have to have had seven people who washed, not six. Why you need why seven, not six? The Gemara says it's a ruba de minkara. It's an obvious rove. Six is just barely a rove. But seven, it's very clear. It's obvious when you look at seven, you have a majority. So that's the Gemara. So the two Amoraim argue, what exactly was the machlokus between Yosef ben Yoezer and his predecessors in terms of the Ayal Kamsa, whether it was the Chan? The question was the machlokus of whether Rosh HaAruch is a disqualifier on the grasshopper, or is the question one of Kanaf of Chofenes Ruba, whether the wings cover the body, Ayideat Chak, whether that's enough. Okay. Ask a Temanim. I'll tell you. Fine. Now the Gemara continues. Valmashke be mitbechaya dechan. So there, firstly, as an aside, a couple of details here. Number one, there is another nusach in the Mishnah. It's not discussed here, but this Mishnah appears in the first Perek Pesachim in those very, very difficult sugyas, what we know as Rav Chanina Skana Kohanim, the last Mishnah. In the last two Mishnayos in the first Perek of Pesachim deal with Tumah V'Tahara, and those sugyos are generally dreaded by people. So in the midst of that discussion, there's a machlokus of what the nusach of the Mishnah is supposed to be. It depends which dental letter you have after the mem. Is it mashke beis mitbechaya with a tes, which is what we have? Or is it mashke be midbechaya with a dalet? The difference is mashke be mitbechaya, in the beis mitbechaya there have only been two liquids, water and blood. On the Mizbeach, you had water, the Nisach HaMayim, you had blood, you also had oil, olive oil, and you also had wine, which is a more expansive list. So it's a machlokus about which was his testimony about, Mashke Be Mitbechaya or Midbechaya. For our purposes, it doesn't really matter. It seems what the Gemara is going to conclude or understand Rabbi Yosei Shita is that he is arguing against a rabbinic gezerah. He's arguing that a rabbinic gezerah doesn't apply in the Beis HaMikdash, either in the Beis HaMitbechaim or on the Mizbeach, which in itself isn't surprising. We know there are any number of Tidim D'Rabbanon that they didn't apply in the Mikdash itself. Most famously, when it comes to the last Perek in Erevin, we say Ein Shvus BaMikdash. There are no Malachos D'Rabbanon on Shabbos in the Mikdash if it's necessary for doing Avoda. You know, even things that might not be Docha D'Raisa, a D'Rabbanon we would ignore. So here, Yosef ben Yoezer said that certain Gzeres D'Rabbanon on Tumas Mashkim do not apply either in the Beis HaMitbechaim or on the Mizbeach as well. So the question is, what exactly was that? So, my dechan, what does it mean that these liquids, the blood and the water for the moment, let's say, are tahar? Rav amar dechan mamish, they are completely tahar. Ushmuel amar dechan melitame acherim, they are tahar from defiling other things. Aval tumas atzman yeshpem, they themselves become tame. Rav amar dechan mamish, Rav says they're completely tamar. Tahor, kasavar tumas mashkim derabanan. Rav believes that all tumas mashkim is only the Rabbanon. In other words, liquids themselves are never makabel tumah min haTorah. V'chi gazu Rabbanon tumah, when did the Rabbanon create tumah by mashkin mid Rabbanon? B'mashkin de'alma, by liquids outside. Avo b'mashkin be'mit b'chaya lo gazu Rabbanon. They didn't want to increase tumah in the mikdash that would potentially be metameh, karbanos, and so on. That's Rav's position. Now, Shmuel Amar, no, dechan melatame acherim, the tohar from between metame others, aval tumas atzman yesh b'hem. Why? Kasavar tumas mashkim doraisa. Shmuel believes that tumah mashkim, in fact, is doraisa. Letame acherim is only the rabbanon. V'chi gozer rabbanon b'mashkim da'alma, mashkim mitbechaya lo gozer. So Rav and Shmuel both agree that there's certain tumas mashkim that's only the rabbanon, and they weren't gozer on the basis of mitbechayim. Which tumas mashkim is only the rabbanon? Rav says, any tumah for mashkim. And Shmuel says, no, only mashkim's ability to be metame other stuff, other foods, but to become tame themselves, mashkim are tame, become tame min haTorah. The difficulty, as Rashi points out, the Gemara Pesachim asks, is the Torah says, v'chol mashke asher yishaseh, v'chol kli yitma. It says that any liquids that's drunk, that are in the kli, that the sheretz falls into, become tame. So the Gemara there answers, because everybody sort of knows, that mashkim do play a role in tumah, a very important role, but it's not themselves. Mashkim are necessary to be machshir food, to be makabel tumah. If you pluck an apple from the tree, it can touch, you know, 20 dead bodies, and 15 dead shratzim, and 5 nevelos, and an isha nida, and a zava, and it's still tahar. Why? Because in order for food to be makabel tumah, it needs hechshir. And the way you make a food mukshar lekabel tuma is by putting water on it. Either you put the water on intentionally, or if the water falls on by itself, but you're glad it's there, that is the topic of Meseches Machshirin, which is sort of towards the end of Seder Taros. So that is where it's clear that Mashkim play a role, Min HaTorah involvement in Tuma. But it's not quite as clear that the Tame themselves are certainly that they are Metame other things. There's an interesting Rashbam on that. You want to understand the concept of Hechsher. I don't know, it's absolutely compelling, but it's very interesting. For a vessel to be Mekabel Tumah, it has to have had a Gemar Malach, it has to be complete. So the Rashbam, if I'm not mistaken, his commentary on Chumash, suggests the same thing is true with food. When you want to eat food, what do you do with it first? You wash it off. So that's considered the Gemar Malacha for the food. It works for some foods, maybe not all foods, but anyway, that's a major topic when it comes to Tumah Tara, of determining whether something was Mokshar Lekabel Tumah or not. So that's what Rav would explain, that when the Torah speaks about Tumah by Mashkim, it's not Tumas Atzman, it's not the Mashkim themselves becoming Tameh, but rather they're being Machshir, solid foods, so that those will be Mekabel Tumah.
And it can't be attached to the ground, right?
Correct. It has to be when it's detached from the ground, otherwise...
Rain.
And presumably you're glad that there's rain, right? In other words, if let's say you have stuff, you have apples, they're not mukshar, and there's a flood, and the water gets on it, so it's not mukshar l'kabel tumah. That's a famous drasha of a chi yutan mayim al zera, and yutan is spelled without a vav, so they say yutan dumya de yitain. Ma yitain, when you do it yourself, it's nichale, it's with intent because you want it, so af yutan de nichale. Okay, so there, yeah, but you're correct. When it's attached to the ground, there cannot be any hechsher until it's detached. Finally, well, at least we'll start this. Ve'al deyikrav b'misa lemisa misari v'kar le'yosef sharia. Yosef asra miboyle. They should have called him Yosef the Machmir. What do you mean? He wasn't being makel. He said, you touch a dead body, you become tame. So what are you talking about? So the Gemara says, no, the Oraisa, the Yikrav, Tameh, the Yikrav, be the Yikrav, Tahar. So Minat Torah, only someone who touches the mace becomes Tameh. But someone who touches the person who touched the mace doesn't become Tameh. And mid the Rabbanan, they said that if you touch a person who touched the mace, then you become Tamei also, which the Gemara in a few lines is going to say, what are you talking about? That's also in our Torah. If I touch a mace, I become an Avatama. If you touch me, you become a Rishon Latama. You're not Tamei Shivas Yamim. So that's what the Gemara will ultimately say that. But a person who touches a mace is also Tamei Min HaTorah. Touches the person who touches the mace. The person who touches the Tamei mace is Tamei Min HaTorah. So the Gemara says, but initially the Gemara says that's what his Chiddush was. And the Chachamim came. The Chachamim would gozer on those who touched a person, touched a dead person. And Yosef ben Yosef came. So he restored it to Din Torah. So the Gemara says, wait, the Yikra be Yikra Nami Doraisa. If you touch a person who touched the mace, you're also Tameh. The Chsiv, Bechol Asheiga Bo HaTameh Yitma. Anybody who touches, the Torah says that anybody, anything that the person who's Tamei Meis touches becomes Tamei. That includes a person. So the Gemara says, Amrur Rabbanan Kamei de Rav, Mishmei de Marzot, Rebrei de Rav Nachman, the Amar Mishmei de Rav Nachman. So the Talmidim in the Beis Medrash, in the presence of Rava, quoted Marzutra, the son of Rav Nachman, quoting Rav Nachman, the Oraisa, no, you know what was the Oraisa? The Yikra b'di Yikra b'chiburan Tumah Shiva. If you are touching a person who is touching the mace while he's touching the mace, that's called Tumah Bechiburin, then you are Tamei Tumah Shiva. Shelo Bechiburin, but if that person is no longer touching the dead body when you touch him, then that's Tumas Erev. That's only a one day Tumah. You go to the Mikveh Yitahar. Ve'asu Inu, and the Chachamim came along, the Gazraf Yidu Shelo Bechiburin Tumah Shiva. They would go there, even if it's not bichibun. If you touch a person, that touch a mace, you tamei tumah shiva. And he came along, and he was goes there that it only that it's that you go back to the daraisa. Maihi dichsev hanogeh b'meis l'chonevash adam v'tamei shivas yamim. That's the din daraisa of someone who touches a mace. Uksiv v'chol hashei gabo atamei itma. V'hanevash hanogeh titma da'arav. So the Gemara sees a stira in that last pasuk. It says anybody who the guy the Tmei Mace touches any chol ashiyigavat tamei itma, which they think means just like himself. He, in other words, if he's tamei tamei shiva, they become tamei shiva. But v'hanefesh hanogas titmara arav. But someone who touches him is only tamei till night. So which is it? If you touch a tamei meis, are you tamei like him, or are you only tamei till the evening? So the Gemara explains, haketzat kan bechiburin kan shelo bechiburin. So that shows you the source, the idea that tuma bechiburin is tuma shiva. If a person, you're touching a mace and I touch you while you're doing it, I become tuma mace just like you. If, however, you're no longer touching the mace, then I become only tuma tumas erev. That's how they resolve the seeming contradiction in the pasuk, and that's what Yosef ben Yoezer did. The Chachamim had come along and they would gozer that even the yikra biyikrav shelo bechiburin, if you touch the person who's tuma mace, even though he's no longer touching that body, they instituted tuma shiva, and he came along and said, no, let's go back to the din d'oraisa and only tuma b'chiburin. That's what they suggested. So comes along Rava, and he says the following. Amar lehu Rava, he said to the Rabbanon, lava mina lehu lo tislu be buki sriki b'rav Nachman. Rashi says buki sriki are empty vessels, kadim rekim. I think it sounds better in the Aramaic. Don't attribute such narishkeit to Rav Nachman. He never said such a thing. So rather, what did he say? Hachi Amar Rav Nachman, safek tuma b'rshus harabim hitir lahem. No, you know what Yosef ben Yoezer permitted for them? Safek tuma b'rshus harabim. Meaning, if you maybe touch the dead body in the b'rshus harabim, you're tahar. What did he say? He said the yikrav lamisa mesayim. If you definitely touch the dead body, you tameh. But if you only safek touch the dead body, you tahar. Now, the Gemara is going to challenge this, because some of you may know already, you may be familiar with this, based upon the Parsha of Sota, that there's a generally known din, that Safek Tumah Bershus HaYachid is Tameh, Bershus HaRabim is Tar. There's no Chiddush in Yosef Ben Yoezer. The Gemara will talk about that in a second. What was it exactly that he changed that he was lenient on? The more interesting question, though, I forgot to look to see if any of that we've shown him say otherwise. I know that I'm pretty sure that people disagree. What was, according to Rava, what was Rav Nachman's position on Tumah Bechiburin? In other words, the Rabban on the Beis Medrash quoted a view that said that Yosef ben Yoezer said that the only Tumah we leave but when you touch a Tumah Meis, that's Tumah Shiva, is Tumah Bechiburin. You're only Tumah Shiva for touching the Tumah Meis if he's still touching the dead body. And Rava just says that's narishkeit. What exactly was Rava dismissing? So one might be tempted to say, and I think that the Rishonim hold this way, but not on the page. Tosfos explicitly says otherwise, that they believe that Tumah b'chiburin is only the Rabbanon. That in Minat Torah, if you're not touching the mace, if you're touching the guy's touching the mace, even while he's touching him, that Tumah is only the Rabbanon. Which could have been why Rava said what you're saying is narishkeit. You can't say that what Rabbi Yosef permitted was Tumah b'chiburin. You know, and he said Tumah b'chiburin is only Tumah Tamas Erev. I'm sorry that he was matir that Tumah b'chiburin is Doraisa, and he was matir Tumah Shelo b'chiburin because Tumah b'chiburin itself is only the Rabbanon, and there's no way the Chachamim would have made Gzeira on Tumah Shelo b'chiburin, you know, to make it Tumah Shiva if Tumah b'chiburin itself is only the Rabbanon. That's a natural way to read the Gemara. Tosus says it's not. The second Tosus on the page, the Yikrav b'Yikrav. If you go to the fourth line in Tosfos, v'hada amar Rava lo tislu be buke srike b'Rav Nachman lav mishum de islay tumach michiburin lav doraisa. Not because Rava thinks that tumach michiburin is only the Rabbanon. No, and la mishum de kasaver de Yosef ben Yoezer lo ayri bachi. He just thinks that's wrong. That's not what he was talking about. He was talking about something else. But that's actually an important issue in its own right, whether tumach michiburin is doraisa or not. Anyway, so Rava claims that what Rav Nachman said is that the Chiddush of Yosef ben Yoezer was that Safek Tumah B'rshus HaRabim is Tahar. So the Gemara says immediately, V'ha'hilchasa misota gamina le'etz halachlam shmi Sinai, that we learn from Sota, that ma sota b'rshus hayachid, af tumah b'rshus hayachid. Now, there's a sota is a case where a woman has potentially been defiled through adultery. But it's a sota, and the Torah uses the term tumah, v'chinat meis. But it's a suffix. And how does the Torah treat a sota? The Torah treats a sota as a vadai until you clarify with the mayim hama'arim. So based upon sota, we say that just as a sota is a suffix tumah is tameh vadai, so too other suffix tumos are tameh vadai. But where does a sota take place? Only b'rshus hayachid by definition, because in order to have a sota, what did you have to have?
The
Seclusion. Yichud. There's no one there except to actually see what they have ate them and saw them secluded, but nobody saw what went on. The only people who were there were she and the potential adulterer. So the definition of Rishus HaYachid, by the way, and Rishus HaRabim for Tumah purposes is not like Shabbos. Rishus HaYachid for Tumah is whether or not there were two people there or more than two people there. So that becomes the rule also for Safek Tumah generally. So if a person might have touched a sheretz, if it was in the Rishus HaYachid, meaning in a place where there weren't people around, then your Safek Tumah is Tameh. If you're in the Rishus HaRabim and there were people around, then the Safek Tumah is Tahar. So the question is, what is Yosef ben Yoezer teaching us? That's the halacha Moshe Misina that we learn from Sota. Safek tuma b'rishus harabim is tahar. Safek tuma b'rishus hayachid is tameh. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha vein moin kein. Rabbi Yochanan says that yes, mina Torah halacha Moshe Misina safek tuma b'rishus harabim was tahar, but you're not supposed to publicly teach that because people will get confused. There'll be matir and rishus hayachid as well. The ori lev asayi when he came along, the ori le oruye, and he told them lachatchila he was halacha umarin kain, and that was his kula. Tanya nami hachi, we have taught similarly in a brayse. Rabbi Yehuda Omer koros naatz lahem. Yosef ben Yoezer took beams and he stuck them in the ground. Amar ad kan rishus harabim, ad kan rishus hayachid. He explicitly told them safek tuma here good, safek tuma here no good. But Rabbi Yochanan seems to disagree because the Gemara concludes by saying, "Ki asa lekame de Rabbi Yanai amar lahu." When the people would bring Yanai the shaila, he says, "Hamaya b'shikasa de nahara zilu tvalu." This water right there in the indentation in the river. Just go in and, if you have a suffix, be mitar yourself. Which does mean, by the way, that if you had stuffed food that became tamei, a suffix tumer shusaram, we probably say it's tahar because you can't. Food doesn't have tar in a mikvah. But for you as the person, so Rav Yanai said, you don't be samech upon that. Go tovel. The water is readily available. So that then would be the third, according to Rava. That's what the Gemara concludes. The third of Rabbi Yosef's kula is that he was more lechatchila. That Safek Tumah Bershus HaRabim is actually Tahar. So those were his three kulas, and that's why they called him Yosef Shariah. Rabbi Huda Nasiya decided that he still wanted to be a card-carrying member of the Pick Your Rabbinic Organization, whichever one you want to fill in, and therefore two kulas were his quota, a third kula against the practice he wasn't allowed to do. Okay, fine. So that's the end. Now we're finished with Shem Shalakim. God willing, next week we will begin the discussion of Bishalakim.